next week's recording?
100. I certainly hope so. And the last stop, too.
It's not the way you finish.
Please mute.
Okay.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Okay, here we go. Chevra, it is good to be back. I know we missed a few weeks because of my Israel trip. But we will, Be'ezer Hashem, be continuing now. Again, bear in mind this week and next week also, it's coming right on the heels of our pre-Shavuot series. So I'm going to do my best. It's a little bit of a presentation marathon. But what I want to do is introduce our next sugya, which I began at least alluding to before we took a brief hiatus. And the next sugya that we are going to do is the sugya of shtaros. Now, again, I have not yet formulated my plan of attack for how we want to discuss the entire sugya. We could easily spend years on the sugya of shtaros. I'd say the rest of the year, but in our shir, it's several years that we could spend on the sugya of shtaros. Shtaros is a massive and famously complex topic and a particularly rich topic. I think I mentioned to you then that often when people speak about the brilliance of Rav Soloveitchik, or when Rav Soloveitchik himself would speak about the brilliance of his grandfather, Rav Chaim, they'd use the sugya of shtaros as the paradigm for it. The Rav took shtar and turned it from a piece of paper into this whole world of conceptual halacha. He turned it from a piece of paper into das hamiskayev b'chsav. We're going to see some of those terminology soon. So you could really spend a long time on that. So again, frankly, the central topic is not really Gittin. Ironically, Gittin is not really the central masechta for the discussion of shtaros. It's much more discussed in Masechta Ksuvos. There's a lot in Ksuvos. Of course, Ksuvos is also an important shtar, an important document. But insofar as, of course, a get is a shtar, and as we will see, is perhaps the most significant shtar that exists, together with Shtar Kiddushin, as we will, again, perhaps begin to document tonight, it is worthwhile to at least discuss some of the broad strokes of the sugya of shtaros. So I don't know how long we're going to spend on sugya, but I do know some of the basic fundamentals that we must see, certain basic things that you need to know. Any Talmud Chacham needs to know certain basic fundamental yesodos of shtaros, and we will go through some of that. But first, we're going to just cover some more Shakal Bataria. So again, we so far saw all of Daf Beis. We saw all of Daf Beis and all of Daf Tzadi. We saw the first and last Daf in Masechus Gittin. I'm not going to say anything about what we've seen in the middle, but at least we've seen the first and last Daf in Masechus Gittin. And now I want to move to Daf Gimel. We're going to go through the Shakal Bataria of Daf Gimel through the beginning of Dalet Amud Aleph, which is all provided here. This is actually probably going to be the last section of contiguous Dafim that we do at the beginning of the Masechta. We're probably going to skip Daf Dalet and Daf Hey for reasons that I'll outline. We'll probably move to Daf Vav and Daf Zayin for potentially skipping to parts of the second para. But again, we'll talk about all that at a later point. The background to the Shakal Bataria that we are about to read is an original Mishnah and a machlokas between Rabbah and Rabbah. So let's just go back to what we've seen so far. Our Mishnah, the beginning of Masechus Gittin, said that when one brings a get from Medina Sayam, they need to declare, "Bifanai nachtab ubifanai nachtab." It was written and signed in front of me. And the Gemara recorded a machlokas as to why exactly that is necessary. Why do we require that verbal declaration saying that it was written in my presence and it was signed in my presence? And two answers were offered in the Gemara. If you turn to the top of Daf Beis Amud Beis, which is provided here, Rava said, that's on Amud Aleph, but Rava said, "Lefisha ein bekiyin lishma," because in Chutz Aretz, they did not really know how to properly compose a get lishma. A get cannot just be a form document, like Ksubos, for example, right? Ksuba, you could print from the internet, you could have anybody fill out a standard Ksuba, and then the Masechta Kiddushin fills in the right names and fills in the right location and the right time, etc., the right date, and all of a sudden you have a good Ksuba. A get is not that way. You can't mass produce a get. A get needs to be written lishma, targeted for a particular couple, a particular husband and a particular wife, or again, obviously the relationship soon to be dissolved, but it needs to be tailored to the individuals who are going to be using the get. And the Chutz Aretz, they didn't know how to do that. At least they weren't experts in doing that. And therefore, the messenger needs to assert, "I saw this. It was done the right way. It was written the right way. It was signed the right way," etc. That's Rabba's approach. Rava Amar, Rava said, "Uvisha ein edim mitzuyin lakaima," because there aren't going to be witnesses ready to affirm the kashrus of the get. The witnesses are going to be far away. We're in Eretz Yisrael now. You came all the way from Bavel. We don't have air travel right now, so going all the way to Iraq is going to take several weeks. And if somebody raises concerns about the kashrus of the get, we aren't going to have anyone readily available to assert that the get is indeed valid and kosher. So we just want to get it right before anybody's able to raise any error, before anybody's able to raise any challenges or concerns regarding the kashrus of the get. we have to proactively testify right away that the get is kosher in order to avoid that problem. And then the Gemara asked, and this is going to be significant for us, at least as far as the Shach of Tari goes, it won't be central to the Sugi of Shtaros, but it will feature in the Shach of Tari we see in a moment. My Beinayu, this is again the second line of that Beis Amud Beis, page 4. My Beinayu, what is the difference between these two approaches? Ika Beinayu. There are differences between them. There are three differences between them, the Gemara says. What are the differences? Number one, De Asyuhu Beitre. If two people brought the get, why would there be a difference between them? If the issue is Lishma, they didn't write it properly, then would these two people still need to testify b'fanei nafta? Yes, they would, because they're still concerned with Lishma. If the whole concern is that you won't have anybody to validate the get, right here you have two witnesses who are able to validate the get. So they don't need to say b'fanei nafta, let them testify that the get is okay, and that will be sufficient. That's difference number one. Inami, and then the next two are even more intuitive. Inami mimedina lemedina ve'eretz Yisrael. Let's say he went within Eretz Yisrael. He went from all the way, the southern border in the Negev, all the way to the northern border in modern-day Lebanon. Let's say you traveled all the way from one to the other. So that's still distant. According to Rava, the whole concern is that you won't have witnesses ready to testify about it. So you'd still require b'fanei nachtam. According to Rava, the Bati Din in Eretz Yisrael, and all of Eretz Yisrael, the Negev, the north, they all were experts in Lishma, so you wouldn't need b'fanei nachtam. Or alternately, Inami ba'osa medina ba'medina sayam. Let's say you were not in Eretz Yisrael. You were, Bavel's not a good example because the Gemara knows that Bavel's an exception. So let's say you're in Ohio or you're just somewhere in Chutz Laaretz and you come from two neighboring towns that are very close to each other. According to Rava, the whole concern was the distance, that you won't have people there to ascertain that the get is kosher. So if you're from two very close locations, then you wouldn't need b'fanei nachtam because we could just, you know, make a hop, skip, and a jump over to the next town and gather the witnesses. If the concern is that they don't have proper kavana when they're writing the get, then as long as you're in Chutz Laaretz, you need to be concerned. And even if it was a short distance within Chutz Laaretz, you would need b'fanei nachtam. So the Gemara presents three differences between Rava and Rava, three nakamina between them. Now, I noted, I think, at the outset, when we saw this, that this is neither an exhaustive list, nor is it a fully accurate list. We will see that the Gemara later will actually backtrack on some of these nafkaminas between Rava and Rava, and it will add others along the way. That's something that we're going to perhaps see tonight, hinging on a machlokes in Rashi and Tosfos. But that forms the background, okay, for our Gemara. Now we're going to pick up on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph from the line that begins with V'Rava. The Gemara asks a very simple and straightforward question. V'Rava, my time lo amar kirabba. So Rabba had a good approach, Lishma. Rabba was older than Rava. He was a generation before Rava. Rava's fourth generation Amora. Rabba was a third generation Amora. Rabba was the Rebbe of Rava's Chavrusa and sparring partner, Abaye. So Rabba already gave a pretty good approach to why you need Fananatha. Why did you disagree? Why did you insist on a different approach? Amr Lacha, so what will Rava tell you? Mi katanai b'fanei nechtav lishma, b'fanei nechtam lishma. According to Rabba, the whole concern is that it wasn't written lishma. So what should the formula be? What should the verbal declaration be? B'fanei nechtav lishma, b'fanei nechtam lishma. You should just explicate what exactly you're talking about. The mere writing and signing of the get is insufficient according to Rabba. You should have an additional word. That's Rabba's kasha on Rabba. So now the Gemara is going to answer for Rabba. The Rabba, you know, Rabba asks a good kasha. How would you answer that? The dinhu de listening hachi. Rabba answers effectively. He says, "Inachinami." He says, "Really, you're right. Technically speaking, it would actually make more sense if you finish the verbal declaration with the word lishma." Ella, to imashis le dibura, asi lemigze. If you make the verbal declaration too long, not everybody's going to be the biggest talmud chacham, and they might shorten it. They might truncate it, and they might not actually say the full verbal declaration. In other words, Rabba is saying, we wanted to keep this verbal declaration as concise as possible so that we minimize chances that people are going to mess it up. The Gemara says, Hashanami as the Migziah. You could also mess up just the phrase, b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam. You can mess up that phrase too. It doesn't necessarily roll off the tongue. It does have a nice ring to it. But maybe they'll make a mistake with b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam as well. So Rabba says, Chadami tlas guys, chadami tarti lo guys. Look, if it's a three-word formulation, then you might be tempted to engage in shorthand and not say the full thing. If it's just two words, then nobody's going to shorten it, so two words is okay. Fine. So Rava has a kasha on Rava. Why not the word lishma? And Rabbah deflects it. He says, you know what? We're concerned that perhaps people would mess up the formula if it were too long. We want to keep it as concise as possible. Now, what's the next intuitive question going to be? The Rabbah, my time alone, Amar Kerava. Why doesn't Rabbah agree with Rabbah's analysis? Rabbah said, they also gave a compelling reason why you need to find an Echtav, because there aren't Edom present who are going to be able to testify as the Kashrus of the Shtar. So why did Rabbah disagree with that? Amar Lacha, so Rabbah also has an answer. Im Kain, Nisni Befanei Nechtam, Vesulo. If that were the case, if it's all about the Kashrus of the Edom and asserting that it was real, authentic, bona fide kosher Edom that signed on to the Shtar, then what's the important piece? Just the signatures, just Befanei Nechtam. Why do I care about Befanei Nechtav? Befanei Nechtav, Lamali, Rabbah asks. Why would I need Befanei Nechtav? In other words, they're almost asking opposite questions. Rabbah is saying to Rabbah, according to your approach, the declaration is too short. You should have to say more. And Rabbah is saying to Rabbah, according to your approach, the declaration is too long. You should have to say less. According to Rabbah, Rabbah says to Rabbah, you should add a word. You should, according to your approach, you should add Lashma. Rabbah says to Rabbah, according to your approach, you should take out half the statement. You should take out Befanei Nechtav. So just like the Gemara answered for Rabbah, it's going to now answer for Rabbah. Shema mina be'inan l'shma. So Rabbah says, we see from the fact that you need both Befanei Nechtav and Befanei Nechtam that the operative issue here is l'shma, having proper kavana when you compose the get. The Rabbah, how will Rabbah answer? B'dinhu d'lisni hachi. Once again, Rabbah says, really, you're right, enachanami. You should just say Befanei Nechtav. Ela de'im kein. If he just says Befanei Nechtam, we will think that this is a general case of Kiyum Shtaros. What is Kiyum Shtaros? Kiyum Shtaros, we discussed this in the past, are when Edom come into court and testify, these two signatures, we recognize these signatures, you bring in your autograph experts, these two signatures, we recognize them to be accurate, they are indeed the signatures of these two witnesses. And people will think that this one person saying Befanei Nechtam is engaged in Kiyum Shtaros. What would be the problem if they thought he was engaged in Kiyum Shtaros? They might come to make a mistake and think that what? Kiyum Shtaros can be done by just one aid. The Gemara goes on to say, they might think that just one aid can do Kiyum Shtaros. That is Rabbah's answer. The Rabbah, what would he respond to that? Rabbah says, come on, they're going to mess it up with Kiyum Shtaros? No way. Me dummy? Are they really that similar? Hasam yad inan. Hacha befanai. In Kiyum Shtaros, the language is yadinon. We know. Here the language is befanai, before me. Hasam isha lo mehemna, hacha isha mehemna. There are lots of differences between them. In Kiyum Shtaros, a woman is not ne'eman. You need general ne'emenas. You need general rules of edus, of testimony. Here a woman is believed, mehemna. Hasam ba'al davar lo mehemen, hacha ba'al davar mehemen. In regular Kiyum Shtaros, the person who owns the shtar itself, what we call the Baal Dabar, the person who stands to gain from this case, he can't testify, oh, my own shtar is kasher. In this case, the woman can ascertain the kashrus of her own shtar. But Rava, so there are differences between them. We're not really going to get confused. But Rava Amar Lacha, Atuhacha ki amri yadinan milo mehemne. Is it really true that in the case of Befanei Nechtav yadinan wouldn't work? Kivan dechi amrinan yadinan mehemne, azi leichlupe b'kiyam shtaris te'alma be'edah. Really, you pointed to three differences, Rabbah. The language of Yad Inon versus Befanai, women and Baal Davar. Rabbah says two of them, I'll grant you. But the language of Yad Inon would also work for Befanai Nechtav, and therefore people are going to get confused, and that is why Rabbah rejects Rabbah's approach. In short, we'll just sum up the Shaka Vidarya, and then I'll talk about one interesting ramification that comes from it, and then we'll go further to the Gemara that's really going to be the center of our analysis moving forward. In short, each one asks why they disagree with the other's approach, and each one points out a flaw in the language of Befanei Nechtav according to the approach of the other. Again, Rabbah says to Rabbah, according to your approach, it's too short. It should be Befanei Nechtav l'shma, Befanei Nechtav l'shma. Rabbah says to Rabbah, according to your approach, it's too long. It shouldn't be Befanei Nechtav, it should just be Befanei Nechtav. And each really grants the premise of the other. Each one says, Eina chinami, you're right. In essence, the machloka seems to be, we have this imperfect phrase, Befanei Nechtav, Befanei Nechtav, which doesn't really neatly fit into either approach. Each one really acknowledges that according to their approach, the formulation should be slightly different. But each gives an explanation for why it's not there. Rabbah says, if it were too long, people would mess it up. We keep it short. Rabbah says, if it were too short, people would mix it up with Kiyum Shtaros. And we wanted to avoid that, so we made it longer. And that is the resolution of the Shaka Vidarya. Fine. Now, one interesting point for us is there might be a machlokas. There might be a machlokas as to whether or not the language of yodea works. Let's say an aide comes forward with a get. He does not say b'fanai nechta, as the Mishnah instructs him to do. He says, yodea ani, I know that this is a kosher get. Is that sufficient or is it not?
How does he know?
How does he know? Good question. He, again, it could be that he's witnessed it. It's possible, right? Could be that he saw it, but he doesn't say I saw it. He doesn't say b'fanai nechta. He doesn't say that. Maybe he just recognizes the signatures of the witnesses, right?
B'fanai is much more specific. I saw it versus I heard or I know.
So you'd say, Steve, that it does not work, right? Anyone care to differ or argue? It's machlokas, so someone should argue. Yeah.
Be honest with you, whenever you have to, even if you have two aidim, they don't say how they know.
Okay.
They just come forward and they say they know.
Right.
You don't question them as b'fanai, were you there?
So you're saying it should work?
Right.
Possibly. Okay, so I'd say it could be machlokas between Rabba and Rav. Rabba says the whole concern is lishma, right? The whole concern is lishma. If that's the case, would it be enough to say we know the signatures of the witnesses? Probably not. You need to actually assert that it was signed and written in front of you to make sure that it's actually proper. That was what Rabba would say. What about Rava, who holds that it's all about recognizing the signatures, kiyum shtaros? Then perhaps yad inan would be sufficient. And that is indeed the approach of Rashi as interpreted by Tosfos. Let's see if I have this line underlined. It's in the Tosfos here. It's if you look in Tosfos Dibur Maskil Atu, if you look at I have an underline in my Tosfos by Venera. That's
two lines from the bottom.
Yeah, that's where Tosfos disagree with Rashi. Where did they quote Rashi? Okay, here. Let's look at the first line of that Tosfos. Atu ki amri yadanu milo mehemnu. Pirush pekuntres. Rashi says, Hoel ulu didei taima mishum kiyuma, because according to his approach, it's all about kiyum shtaros, mali b'fanai, umali yodeani. It doesn't matter whether he uses the language of b'fanai nachtav. Again, this is within Rava. Or he says, I know that these are accurate signatures. Sherot zolomar d'shliach mehemen ki amar yodea ani. And the shliach is believed when he says, yodea ani. Now, the next question that Tosfos raised, they raise it further on, is, if that's the case, then you have, what's the problem with saying that yodea ani works for Rava but not for Rava, based on the Gemara that we saw at the beginning? What's the problem with saying that it works for Rava but not for Rava? Based on the Gemara we saw in Beis Amud Beis. Okay, true. Well, no, but that would work in the other direction, because if you have the additional concern of Lishma, that would not be an issue. What did the Gemara ask on that Beis Amud Beis? The Gemara asked, what is the difference between Rabba and Rava? It gave three answers. What was not one of those answers? What was not one of them? Yodea Ani. It didn't list Yodea Ani as one of the three differences between Rabba and Rava. So Tosfos asked that as a kasha on Rashi's approach. The answer, you know what? Maybe the Gemara was just talking about cases where one would require b'fanai nechtav and the other would not, rather than alternate formulations that might work. That's how they answer the kasha on Rashi.
You'd say it's not exhaustive. The list is not exhaustive.
Okay, again, or it's, right, exactly. Certainly it's not exhaustive, and it's focusing narrowly on cases where one requires a verbal declaration and the other does not. Not which verbal declarations qualify. That's what Tosfos answer for Rashi. But ultimately, they reject the approach. If you look at the underline that I put there in that Tosfos, that same Tosfos, I'll do the last underline on the page. V'nira di'adati lo mahani afilu l'rava. Tosfos argue that the term yadati does not work, even according to Rava, until he says, they say this earlier on. Again, if you go to the first underline, one underline up, they articulate the same point. Yadati ain mawil, yadati is not enough. And the reason for that is, when he really makes a statement of saying it was done right in front of me, that's a much stronger statement. It's kind of like we were saying before, Steve. That's a much stronger statement than just yadati. It looks really bad for him if he says, I was there. And then it turns out to be bad, as opposed to offering just a generic yadati. I know. Generic yadati, he could explain away, oh, I made a mistake, somebody told me, etc. If he says, I was in the room, I know what happened, and then there's a problem, then it's just going to be much more embarrassing for him. It's a stronger statement. So Tosfos actually require b'fanai nechtam, even according to Rava. But in short, at least according to Rashi, this is an instance of another one of the nafkaminas. When I said before, the list is not exhaustive. According to Rashi, there is another nafkamina between them. According to Rava, you would need the actual formulation b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam. According to Rava, the formulation of yadati would be sufficient.
I mean, technically, it's not a nafkamina, because the question was, if you say b'fanei nechtam, then what's the difference? You're giving me a case where he didn't say b'fanei nechtam.
Well, no, the examples given in the Gemara were questions of whether you need to say b'fanei nechta.
But given that they said b'fanei nechta, we say what's the nafkamina between the rationale
of Rabba and Rabba.
Right, but you want to create a nafkamina where they don't say b'fanei nechta.
But all the examples are where they don't say b'fanei nechta, right? You go from Medina to Medina b'Medina Sayyam. And they don't say b'fanei nechta. Rabba would say kosher. Rabba would say pasul. Right? They're all cases other Rabba David. They're all cases where they don't say b'fanei nechta. B'fanei nechta. For it to be a nafkamina. Right?
Okay. But the rationale.
No. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. Well, we'll continue this. But again, I think again the point is, there is a difference between the three cases and the case here. That's Tosa's point out. For sure. How you formulate that, okay, we'll continue that conversation. But that is the basic shaft of the Tarya here. Let's move to Daf Gimel Amud Beis. Now, before we start, again, we're going to start from the underline at the bottom of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Before we do that, one very important piece of background. We are about to address an extraordinarily fundamental Machlokas Tanaim in the Sugya of Shtaros and really Shas at large. And that is Machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir, regarding Ede Hasima Karsi or Ede Mzira Karsi. Very, very, very important machlokas. In short, the machlokas boils down to the following. And really, again, it's much more nuanced than this because, as the Rishonim point out, Mesechus Ksubos and elsewhere, each of the views is potentially qualified significantly. And again, we'll see how much we do in the sugya, how much we get into the weeds here. But the basic high-level machlokas is the following. Whenever you are dealing with a shtar, there are two critical components of testimony that need to exist on the shtar. The first is on the shtar itself. If everyone's been to a wedding at some point or another, you will probably know that at the beginning at the chasen stish, we have signatures that are put onto halachic documents. One is called the shtar tanaim. Nowadays, it's not a particularly significant document. The other is called the shtar ksuba, which is a very significant halachic document. You have witnesses that sign onto the shtar. Those are called Ede Hasima, witnesses that are signed onto the shtar. Okay, that's number one. But there's another critical moment in the life of every shtar. Not the moment that it's written, not the moment that it's signed, but the moment that it is delivered. If you pay closer attention at a wedding, you will also know, and everybody married will have done this at their own chuppah. At the chuppah, after the ksuba is read, what happens? The chazan takes the chuppah, takes the ksuba, and gives it to the kala, hands it over to the kala. That is what we call mesira. That is what we call mesira. And that too might require witnesses. There are some mesadra kiddushin that require or that ask for ede mesira, that ask the ede kiddushin to stand there to witness the mesira. It's a lot of people don't like it. It's a new thing, and you see some people that really dislike doing it. I once had the misfortune of asking Rameir Twersky to stand up for it to continue to see the Mesiras HaKsuba, and he rolled his eyes at me. He's like, sure. But like, you know, he wasn't going to say no and sit down, but he felt it was entirely unnecessary. And perhaps as we explore the sugya, we'll see that why many feel that it is unnecessary. But you have those two critical moments in the life of Mashtar, Ede Chasima and Ede Mesira, the witnesses who sign and the witnesses who see the giving over of the Shtar. And the Machlokes of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir is which of those two critical moments is the more important as far as Eidos is concerned. Is it the Eide Hasima Karsi? Is it the Eidim that are signed onto the Shtar? Or the Eide Mesira, the Eidim who witnessed the giving of the Shtar? Intuitively, you could probably start coming up with arguments for either one. On the one hand, the Eide Hasima are the ones who are actually signed on the document. That's like much more direct, right? That's what we always require. On the other hand, just signing the document is not really the end of the process. The end of the process is when it's handed over. So you can see an argument say Ede Mesira Karsi. So that is a very fundamental and critical machlokas that serves as the backdrop for our Shaka Bataya and Daf Gimel Amud Beis that we are about to explore in a moment. Steve, you had a question for that?
Yeah, I was just
Is there another kinyan that the chassan makes on the ksuba, on the ksuba, that he accepts?
Okay, so, yeah, so they're, right. They're, in addition to the shtar, well, that's really what the shtar testifies on. The chassan, again, this is a side point for us, because I brought up ksuba. What the first thing the chassan does is he does a maisa kinyan, what we call kinyan sudr, to express his hischaivus. In other words, he obligates himself to all of the terms that are stipulated in the ksuba. And that's really what the document testifies on, right? There's a word at the end of the ksuba, v'kanina, right? That what kanina means, I witnessed the kinyan. The reason why some people leave out the kuf of v'kanina, or at least the stem of the kuf, because they want to fill it in after that kinyan is actually, I personally don't do that because it just leads to mistakes. I think I shared with some of you. My first time reading a ksuba, I found multiple mistakes in the ksuba, under the chuppah. It was not good. It was my cousin's wedding, and my aunt was very mad at me. But we're now once again on talking terms. But what did I do? I stopped. I mean, again, this is really tangential. I'll just go very, very quickly. Masada Kedushin was a very nice man, but a rookie Masada Kedushin. He made a number of mistakes. Number one, he did last names, which was a chumrah of the Rav. But unless you really know what you're doing, you want to avoid it because you easily make mistakes. So he messed up the last name. So my cousin, it was, is the Kala, and the Chassan was, of course, this a very nice young man marrying into the family. So I got up to his name, and I thought I was blanking on it. I thought I forgot his last name. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be the most embarrassing moment of my life that I forgot his last name. So I still remember it. I like calmed myself, and I said, think, you know his last name. It is Packer. I'm like, that does not say Packer. You know, I don't care how you spell the name. There's no way in which that could be Packer. So the first name is you messed up the last names, and then he forgot the kuf and bekanina. So twice he called up the witnesses while under the ksuba to change it. Yeah, not a good moment for me. But okay, but we got past it. So now, advice, if you're going to be reading a ksuba under a chuppah, do a proofread in advance to make sure there are no issues. Word to the wise.
The kanina is in there before the kinyan is made.
It doesn't pass on anything. It's a chumrah. It's a chumrah. I always fill in bekanina before. I don't want to deal with that question. I don't use last names. Even though, again, a Rebbe of Rosenzweig does use last names with the chumrah of the Rav. If you're on Rosenzweig's level, then you can do last names. For a simple Jew like me, I don't get started with it. But that's what Rav Willig advises as well. Anyway, that informs the backdrop for our Shakal Taya. Let's try to, even if we're not going to start the Rav Chaim that appears on the third page of the sources, let's at least try to get through the Shakal Taya. Says the Gemara. Ularaba da Amar lefisha'in b'kiyan lishma. Rab. Who holds that the whole issue is lishma? Man haytana to ba'i ksila to ba'i chasima lishma. Who requires both ksiva lishma and chasima lishma? We should only require one or the other. E Rebbe Meir, chasima ba'i ksiva lo ba'i. According to Rebbe Meir, we should require a chasima lishma, but not a ksiva lishma. Rebbe Meir is the one who holds chasima kars. So it should only be Edim on the chasima, not on the ksiva. The Gemara brings this non is really the Mishnah later in the second half of the base. Ain kospin b'mechubar lakarka. You're not allowed to write a get on something that's attached to the ground, on the bark of a tree or on a very large palm leaf or something like that. Kosvo ala mechubar lakarka. Let's say somebody did so, b'dieved. They wrote a get on, again, a very large, let's say, a date palm leaf or something like that, to losho, and then they pick it. Chosmo b'nasno la. Kosher. If they signed it, as long as it was detached, and gave it to her, kosher. Now, of course, does not explicate Rebbe Meir here, but as I think Rashi already points out, why do we assume it's Rebbe Meir? Because we have a general principle that Sam Mishnah is Rebbe Meir. So here, Rebbe Meir is telling you that as long as the chasima was done at a point where it was detached, that is sufficient, clearly indicating that what is the important and critical step according to Rebbe Meir? The chasima. E Rabbi Elazar, if you want to work with Rabbi Elazar, ksiva ba'i, chasima lo ba'i. Rabbi Elazar would only require lishma on the ksiva, but not on the chasima, not on the signatures. Why? He holds the signatures are insignificant, are not substantial, because what is the important witnesses that are needed on the document? Not the witnesses that are signed, but the witnesses that see the mesira, ede mesira karsi. So it doesn't really work for either. Nobody should require both b'fanei nechtam and b'fanei nechtam if the issue is lishma. Chitem olam Rabbi Elazar. If you want to tell me, really, it's Rabbi Elazar. Chilo ba'i Rabbi Elazar chasim lishma mida oraisa mida rabbanon ba'i. You want to tell me that Rabbi Elazar really holds that on a rabbinic level, yeah, it's true. On a d'oraisa level, you don't need rabbinic level, you do. That doesn't work. Why? When the Gemara, when the Mishnah later on quotes three gittin that are psulin, and one of them is ain alav edim, that is a psul derabanan, indicating that Rabbi Elazar holds that there is no requirement even midirabanan. Then the Gemara says, below ba'i Rabbi Elazar chasim alashma, it's not gimel gittin psulin v'mnise safad kosher, because we have this Mishnah that declares that there are three gittin psulin. But if they married, if they relied on that get, the vlad is kosher. In other words, it's only puzzle me the rabbanan. What are the three cases? Because of iksav yado ve'ein alav edim, he wrote it without edim, the important one for us. Yesh alav edim ve'ein bozman, it has edim without a time written in it. Be'ez Hashem, if at some point we move to the second parak, we'll talk about the sugya bozman. Yesh bozman ve'ein bo ela edachad, or it only has one witness. Hare elu shlosha getim tzulin, v'mnises avlad kosher. In all those cases, the get is puzzle me the rabbanan. Remember, the first case was no witnesses, it's puzzled me they're abundant. And what happens next in the Mishnah? Rabbi Elazar Omer, Rabbi Elazar says, Aval Bisha ain't a love Adim, Elisha Nust no love if ne Adim, Kosher, but go between the Chas Mishabadim. Rabbi Elazar comes along and says, if he gave it without witnesses signed on it, that's not a problem. And again, the Tanakam will say, Abam, me to Rabbanan. Rabbi Elazar is coming along and saying, nope, there's no Dilraisa problem, there's no Dilrabanan problem. You don't really need signatures on a get, according to Rabbi Elazar. Why do you have signatures on a get? What he calls tikkun ha'olam. This is not tikkun olam that we often talk about. Tikkun ha'olam is a different concept. What he means is, you want to have the signatures on the get, because let's say you rely on the people who just witnessed the mesiras ha'get, the handing over of the get. And then they go on vacation, or they move out to Hong Kong. And now you have a question about the kashrus ha'get. Now you're going to have problems. Really, fundamentally, halakhically, they suffice. You're just asking for practical problems if you just rely on those witnesses, because they're not always going to be present. If you have them signed on to the get, and you're guaranteed that the witnesses will always be in the same place as the get itself. Fine. So the Elo Rabbi Meir. The Gemara says, really, maybe it's Rabbi Meir. Chilo bai Rabbi Meir siva lishma mita oraisa. Either Rabbanan Bayi, the Gemara says a similar answer. Maybe Rabbi Meir requires ksiva on a Rabbanan level. But the Gemara says that's not good as well. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman reports the name of Rabbi Meir, last line of Gimel on the base. Omer Hay Rabbi Meir, Afilo Mitzao Ba'ashpa Ba'chaspo V'nastala Kosher. Rabbi Meir says you could even just find it in the dump, in the heap, and then just sign it and give it to her, and it's kosher. So Rabbi Meir clearly does not require ksiva, even Midr Rabbanan. Chiteima Anan Midr Rabbanan. If you want to say that whole thing when he said you can find it in the garbage, it's only on d'oraisa level. Yachi Omer Haya Rabbi Meir. It's very Torah. Just a little misleading. You should have said that. Oh, you're allowed to do that. That's very misleading. You should have said on a d'oraisa level, you're allowed to do that, but not on a d'rabbanan level. So we're stuck. Is it Rabbi Elazar or is it Rabbi Meir? El Olam Rabbi Eliezer. Really, it's Rabbi Elazar. Tima Hecha Deleka Edim Kla. Hecha Deika Edim Kla. When does Rabbi Elazar say that you don't need a chasima? When there are no edim at all. When nobody is signed on it at all. When somebody is signed on it, you need the signatures to be good. Why? To Amar Rabbi Abba, as Rabbi Abba reports, Modu Rabbi Elazar bin Mizuyah mitocho shehu pasal. In other words, here, this is again an important principle. We'll see how much we get into it. Rabbi Elazar holds better not to sign at all than to sign in a problematic way. You sign in a problematic way, that is called mezuyach mitoka. The whole thing is internally a joke. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar would say that, yeah, you don't technically need witnesses signed, but when they do sign, they had better sign it the right way. That's why you need a fanei nechta. If Ashi offers an alternative answer, if Ashi Amar and Rabbi Yehuda, we have another day in the Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda, San Rabbi Yehuda, posel, ash tehek sivaso, vach asimaso betalush. He says that you need both ksiva and chasima to be on this leaf after it's been detached. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda sees significance in both the ksiva and the chasima. So why didn't we establish it like Rabbi Yehuda to begin with? Hadrina and Rabbi Meir, the Stamasis and Rabbi Meir. Hadrina and Rabbi Lazar, the Kaimel and Hilchos HaKavase, the Gittin. We wanted to say it could be like Rabbi Meir because of the Stam Mishnah, the principle that we saw before. And we wanted to say like Rabbi Elazar because the halakha is like him by Gittin. But Rabbi Rashi says there's a third view that maintains that both ksiva and chasima are significant. Now that is the Shaka Mataria. And of course, again, the Shaka Mataria pertains to Mifanei Nafta, Mifanei Nafta, Mtsiva, Kasima, etc. The critical thing for us is that we do have this Machlokas presented between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir about Eide Kasima and Eide Kasima, Eide Mtsiva or Eide Kasima Karsin. Is this the central location of the Sugya? No, it's not. But again, if we're doing Maseches Ge'etin and we're talking about Shtaros and we're coming across this Machlokas, it does provide us an opportunity to at least explore these concepts on some level. And Bezrim, we will begin to do so. Next time, just to preface what we're going to do next time, we're going to probably see a critical machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. Let me just foreshadow what we're going to do next time. And I think I may have mentioned this in the past. The Rambam has a statement that all shtaros are midrabbanan. The Torah generally has a principle that testimony needs to be offered, bepeh, needs to be offered verbally. You can't just write it down. The Rambam seems to say that all shtaros are midrabbanan. The Ramban is outraged that the Rambam makes such an assertion. Why is he outraged? How can you say that all get are midrabbanan? What get must be midaraisa? What star? What star is midrabbanan? What star must be midaraisa? Give me the answer. What star must be midaraisa? A get dissolves in Isha. She's an Isha's ish. She's asur l'kulyama. Now all of a sudden, a star is delivered. What is midrabbanan? And now she's allowed to remarry. It must be midaraisa. So how do we explain the Rambam? Rav Chaim Soloveitchik offers a famous explanation for the Rambam that Ezra Shem will explore as we continue to explore the sugya of shtaros. Shkolach, everyone.